Welcome to Webster Voices, a service of Webster University, a truly global university. In this podcast, we speak with photographer, videographer, and professor Jen Morris, whose exhibit, Sanctioned Memory, is on display in Webster University's May Gallery through November 3rd. My guest today is Professor Jen Morris. Jen, thanks for coming by and talking to us today.
Thanks, it's my pleasure.
Through photography and video, Professor Jen Morris questions culture depiction of landscapes. She explores personal and public spheres of memory and dominant power structures. Jen, can you kind of explain what that means?
We personally have memories, but then we have more broad cultural memories. I'm sort of interested in how those two things intersect, how they mesh, and how we see ourselves, how we perceive ourselves, but also how we define ourselves, and who and what makes those definitions, and what are the power structures that create those definitions.
And you do this through photography and video.
I hope so.
Well, we do too.
I hope so.
Yes, but what brought you to that place that this was your calling?
I definitely have always loved photography ever since I had my first camera put in my hands. It's just been something that's a part of me. That was in high school. My father lent me his Nikon FT2, and like, I can't imagine life without a camera.
They say that passion finds you. You don't find it. Yeah, is that your case too?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe.
And your rubric for the kind of photography you do and your thought process, had that been part of your life before photography, or did the photography take you to this place where you want to identify the things we just talked about?
It definitely, photography took me to that place. But I think I've always thought photographically. So I believe that even before I had a camera, there were just scenes or images that I wanted to retain and remember. And then having a camera, it was magic. It was like, oh, now I can remember those things. Here it is.
Are you able to walk around and see life outside of the lens, or does everything that you see kind of inspire you pictorially?
I think it goes both ways. But I have to say, the moments that I walk into a scene having an expectation of a photograph are generally the times when my photographs fail. And it's usually the times that I'm open to just finding things that I don't know what I'm going to find that I have the most success. And often I'll have to return to a place if I know I have to take a photograph in that place, if I need a photograph from that place. I'll have to return to it a few times to get into that state of mind where I don't have that expectation anymore, where I feel like I've taken all the photographs I should take. Then I start taking the photographs that actually matter. It's those expectations that always get in my way.
Among other things, your path has led you to become an associate professor of art at Landmark College and an artist teacher.
The Vermont College of Fine Arts is in Montpelier, Vermont, and it's a low residency MFA program. And I really believe in this program. It's incredible. And I work for them as an artist teacher, which is equivalent to being a studio advisor for an MFA student. And Landmark College, that's in Putney, Vermont, and I love Landmark College. I am so lucky to work there, and I'm lucky to work with the students I have there. Landmark College, you must have a learning difference or disability to apply.
And I suppose that you learn from teaching as well as you teach students, too.
I absolutely learn from teaching. I think it's one of the most important parts of my practice. I mean, there's many important parts to my practice as an artist, but I definitely have always loved teaching because that exchange between me and the student is something that definitely feeds my thought process and gets me excited about making work too.
Has any student surprised you with their work, and have you said, there's somebody that's going somewhere?
Like all the time. Yeah, teaching is magic. It's wonderful to be in front of the classroom because nothing else matters in that moment.
Earlier, we mentioned that you explore personal and public spheres of memory and dominant power structures. Can you explain what that means?
I'm really interested in how structures become powerful and how that influences us as a culture. I'm interested in how it influences us individually as well. So where do I fit within that? Where does anybody fit within that? And of course, we can only speak from our own cultural and historical place. I'm basically interested in like what's in power, why they're in power, and what they do with that power. And how does that affect us, anybody? You know, how does that power affect us personally or us publicly?
What do you look for in your shoots?
I think a lot about landscape, and I think a lot about how landscape represents us as a culture and how we use landscape to represent us. I think about the way we use landscape to represent us as a culture. And in the instance of the exhibition I have here at Webster, I was thinking about the landscape of Vermont and the quarrying industry that's there. And I was thinking about the landscape of Arlington National Cemetery and the memorial that's there, and how the marble from the quarry becomes a memorial, why, how it became that, who is it memorializing, and who makes those memorials.
I noticed those pictures. It's hard to describe pictures in a podcast, but they're gorgeous, and they demand your attention when you walk by them. So I'm really glad you brought your program here. What is the name of it?
It's called Sanctioned Memory. And again, that hints back to your original question about personal and public spheres of power structures. Like, who is sanctioning that memory? How is that memory being sanctioned? What definition of that memory is being preserved? Why is it being preserved? And just exactly what does that memory define? And who does it represent?
You're listening to Webster Voices, a service of Webster University, and we're speaking with Associate Professor Jen Morris about our work with video and photography. Have you ever started out with an idea for a shoot and then taken the shoot in a whole different direction?
Absolutely. And I think that those are the moments when I've gotten rid of my expectations. Yeah, I'm not a modernist, or at least I hope I'm not a modernist. I don't believe in this sort of grand inspiration sort of falling on top of me, hitting in the head, and then that becoming art. But you know, photography is a visual medium. It's very much a semiotic medium. So the way that you order images, it creates new meaning, and the way that you use the signs and the symbols and everything that semiotics is. In a way, because it's a visual medium, if I'm thinking too much about it verbally, then I don't really understand enough of what I'm getting from the images for them to become images. I've absolutely walked into projects with one expectation, and just allowing the project and the research to kind of go back and forth and let me understand where it's going to end up, that I hope I'm good at. I hope I'm good at doing that.
I'm sure when you get that right shot in that right moment, it feels right. It just, you can tell.
Sometimes, though, you can tell, and then you get back, and then you download the photographs, because I do work digitally, and then you look at the photograph, and you're like, that's not at all what I thought it was. Or even better, you allowed yourself to take 27 other photographs, and then 6 months later, you're re-editing and re-evaluating the images that you took, and you notice this image that's in there. And to use a photographic term, that latent, you know, like, oh my gosh, I didn't see that image. I took that image, so I saw that image, but I didn't recognize that image right after I took it. And now I understand that that's something definitely that needs to be considered. Those are my favorite moments, I think.
When I used to do voiceovers, one of the things that always bothered me was I always thought I could do it better. Does that happen to you on photography?
I don't know an artist that doesn't happen to. Like, I'm thinking about a colleague who's a painter who's, years ago stated, like, you know, it's the hardest thing to just walk away from the painting, to stop painting. Like, how do you know when to stop painting? And in photography, I think everybody has their own take about when that question is. But photography is fun, too, because it's like, well, how many more times am I going to visit that site to photograph? When do I know that I'm done photographing at that site? And I think sometimes it really is just this moment of like, I just have to commit and move on. Otherwise, I'm just going to obsess over this place forever. I think what's beautiful is that everybody has their own answer. And I think it's important for us to maintain those differences and in the way that we answer that question. And I think sometimes, again, if there was a prescription for what makes a good story in photography, then maybe no new good stories would be made. I talked about this a little bit in my artist lecture. It's such an interesting point in photography because every photograph has pretty much already been taken. Like, we're not going to take a new photograph, especially in the age of Instagram. It's liberating in the sense that now we can use images as quotations and as mise-en-scene. And we can create that photographic space in a way that elicits new meaning and uses those signs in ways that have a different context and have a different trajectory. And so I just don't think there is a simple answer for what makes a good photographic story.
Can anyone really interested in photography be taught how to tell stories?
I'm banking on it. It is absolutely teachable. And I believe that it's important, especially now, to be teaching media literacy, to be teaching literacy in image making or image interpretation or photographic literacy, because it is so ubiquitous within our lives. Photography is everywhere, especially since the onboard camera of the iPhone and other cell phones. Like, it's less of a phone and it's more of an internet personal computer camera tool. And so if we're employing and deploying photographs at the rate that we are, understanding how and why we're doing that is imperative in my mind. And I think what's been very interesting to me, I've been teaching in a college context since 2000. And over that time, going from the weight of instruction being in darkrooms and in chemistry and analog, for lack of a better word, photographic processes, to the bulk of instruction shifting into digital. And really that has to do with the programs that I've worked with and the context of the schools that I've worked in. But now teaching in the age of Instagram, I find myself using Instagram to help students understand what they're already doing and sort of illustrate how to do things in photography and hopefully push the scale of understanding into the image as opposed to the assumption that sort of we have using Instagram. I mean, like, why do we like a photograph on Instagram? Students come into a class at so many different levels, and that's what makes teaching exciting, because even though that person may have what appears to be less experience, their interpretation or their ideas are coming from a different place than the person who has a lot of experience. And I don't actually believe in talent. And the reason I say that is because, yes, I mean, talent is something, and some people are more prone to be good at something than someone else. But in the end, being an artist has nothing to do with talent. It has to do with a lot of work, and it has to do with a lot of investment of time, and it has to do with a lot of investment of energy. And so those different levels of experience, or to put it in quotes, ability with photography, that definitely makes the class exciting, especially when the student that, you know, others in the class might assume like, oh, they don't know anything, but when they come up with something wild, it's because they're coming from it, from a, you know, a place of no assumptions, and then, which kind of goes back to the, like,
inspiration.
Yeah.
Is there a place that people listening can view some of your work that aren't here in St. Louis?
Thanks. I do have a website, and it's just my name. So it's jenmorris.net, JenMorris.net.
And I've seen the work, and it's well worth visiting.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Professor Jen Morris, photographer, videographer, teacher. You can see her work on display right here at Webster University's May Gallery through November 3rd. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
You too. Thanks so much for having me.
You've been listening to Webster Voices, a service of Webster University. I'm Jim Singer. Thanks for listening. With special thanks to photographer, videographer, and professor Jen Morris, this has been Webster Voices, a service of Webster University, the global university.